What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war.
Libertarianism.
On drugs.
Socialism.
I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Hello, this is Notes from the Future, here to tell you that the music you hear behind Tuke's voice is by William Molson. He's an Austin-based musician, and you can find more of his music on soundcloud.com/William Molson. Molson spelled M-A-L-S-A-M. Thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. What would save the world?
All right, so welcome. We're going to be talking about a couple different things today. We're going to be talking about the three E's, education, environment, and education, with my friend Robert Feldman, who I've known since high school. But we never really hung out that much in person. We mostly like talked on the internet about various young, forming, world-changing point of views kinds of things. We also got Brittany Palmer Wallace, who, if you've listened to my show before, you've definitely heard her very close creative partner Jackson Sturkey's music on here. And she's going to be talking a little bit about the rise in discrimination since Donald Trump's presidency. And those things sound like they're not related, but they definitely are, because all three of those things are going to be wildly affected by Donald Trump's presidency.
Oh, well, you know, it's actually not going to affect us that much. Like, the president doesn't even have that much power.
And I hope you are right, little cynical man there. Or not cynical man, optimist little white man, or whatever you are. I hope you are right. So let's get to the point. Let's get to the questions here. So I want to hear, like, what you at this time think would save the world, or like what are the things that come to mind when you're asked that question? The answer could be a question, but Brittany, why don't you go first and then Robert?
All right. So right now, what I think would save the world is I think that we do need actually more education. So it's really good that you're here, Robert. I think that having people educated and teaching people compassion and teaching them about the world is what's going to save the world. Because right now, I feel like the world is in crisis because there's all of these feuding groups of people, when really we should all just be coming together to try and make this place a better place. Because when we're all fighting against each other, it's just shitty for everyone. So education, compassion, and just exposure to different cultures and different worlds, and, you know, trying to stomp out this fear that people have of the unknown, or the fear of difference.
Okay, cool. So, Robert, I want to hear what you have to say, and then I'm going to say some stuff.
Well, Brittany already covered almost all my points, so I'm just going to go into detail. Education is vital. I feel especially early childhood education is something that we completely overlook in the U.S., Get kids reading, learning, and doing math early on, and you're developing habits that will last with them for a lifetime. Also, just generally, the curriculum needs to be strengthened. The fact that certain states refuse to teach evolution just on religious ground is something that I think isn't protected by religious freedoms, because you can still teach that at church. Schools are to teach actual facts that we have established. Take a theology class. I don't care. Offer a theology class. But curriculums need to be strengthened so that we have critically thinking adults and voters into the future.
So now, I hear a lot of what you're saying. So I guess what I'm thinking about is I heard two things from your answers. I heard you saying that people need to get together and not be fighting and not have all these different feuding groups. And then the first thing that came to mind was I feel like there's not a lot of emphasis on like emotional education or how do people handle emotions. So what's happening a lot right now is people are like, oh, you want to talk to me about this thing? Well, you are just saying it too angry and I don't want to hear what you're saying. And that becomes a tone policing thing. But I also understand why people wouldn't want to be talked to that way. So there's got to be this difference between allowing someone to express themselves and being attacked. There's definitely people, I wonder like how people can learn to differentiate between the two so that people can hold emotional spaces for each other. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Or so I feel like I go a little abstract with the emotion stuff. But I also think, so you were talking about like the habits people need to develop to become informed adults. So like what habits do you think people need to become informed adults that don't just feud with other people and like know how to adequately express themselves to other people so that we can have some sort of mutual support?
I think a huge one is, like I said, exposure. Because the problem that I see a lot of the times is that people don't know how to have this emotional conversation or how to have this conversation with people who are different than them. Whereas if when they were younger, they had exposure to different cultures and exposure to different races of people and exposure to, you know, different languages and different ways that people interact with each other, you wouldn't have these people growing up having this one view of the world and believing that that is the only view and that's the only way it should be.
You know, it could easily be a solution to have like a cultural class in school. Like we have social yes. studies and history, like that's where we could have the creationism. Some people believe this, some people believe this, some people believe this, and then that's like a normal thing.
Yeah, and just mm-hmm. teaching people it's okay to believe different things than somebody else. That's something we don't teach right now. I feel like what we teach right now is this is the way it is, and if you don't believe this way, you're wrong. And I think that's why New York is so great, but you'll meet a lot of people here from like these Midwestern places and these other places, and they fled because their point of view was just counted as wrong, even though it's just a point of view.
Mm-hmm. I agree that exposure is very important. And I feel like many Americans have this idea in their head that American history is history, which isn't true. So teach Chinese history in the history classes. Teach more than just European history, African history, history of the early Mesopotamian cultures. I feel like the only way that I have a broader the only reason I have a broader perspective in certain issues is because I expose myself to the entire history of humankind, not just the last 300 or 400 years that the U.S. has been around. And I think that also just how we interact with each other. Again, I read somewhere that in Japan, young children don't really have schoolwork when they first attend school. It's more about building their social skills and teaching them how to work with each other. And I feel like having that maybe in preschool or pre-K kindergarten would be a big help for American youth. It's just try convincing politicians that it's worth spending the money on that.
And it's like, it's so interesting too, because I'm from Canada, and so my education was based in Canada, and we learn a lot about, you know, U.S. history and culture, as well as different cultures all over the world.
Yeah, I don't know shit about Canada.
Yeah, and see, and that's the thing, is like, I'll tell people I'm from Canada, and the only concept that most New Yorkers have, they're like, oh, Toronto or Quebec, and I'm like, oh, the West Coast, and it's
something. I know Nova Scotia, I know Vancouver, I watched Degrassi.
Yes. But it's like, you know, in Canada, if you don't know the states, or like if you don't know that the United States has an electoral college, like you've been failed in your education by the Canadian system. Whereas like in the states, all you really need to learn, it seems, is what happens in the United States. And I think that that's a disservice to the youth of the world, because, you know, you are going to meet people from different cultures, and not being taught how to interact with different people is just a disservice to everybody.
So here's my question, but how do we deal with bigots? You know, I mean, do you think so? People, I have this thing where people are like, oh, well, such few people are bigots. But what's happening right now is that people kind of feel like there's this like discrimination against white supremacists right now. It's like very vague. We're like calling it the alt-Reich. I think it kind of sounds like Third Reich. I think somebody else came on my Facebook and called it alt-Reich. You know, it's like there are people who like straight up believe that like black people are lazy and straight up believe all these scary things. So it's like, oh, we want to accept everybody. We want to accept all these different beliefs. Like we want to accept, you know, Roman Catholics or like extreme Catholics just as much as we want to accept like an atheist who like participates in S&M and like only fucks trans people. Like, you know, like those are so wildly different, but they're both okay as long as you're not like fucking like hurting somebody else or infringing on somebody else's rights. But this gets complicated. So how do we put up with bigotry? Like, how do we have to be nice to bigots?
I think no. And I think that what we need to do is educate them, because that's what's going to happen. But the problem is that it's very hard to educate a bigoted person. So what I've started doing, and what's been happening to me a lot since the election, is I have not been able to take a subway ride since the election where somebody has not said something derogatory to me, which has never happened to me before in my life.
Are you serious?
That has never happened to me before in my entire life. But since the election, every time I get on a subway, it seems like I'll get a comment. And yesterday I was really emotionally raw and somebody said something and I actually ended up crying a little bit. And this Caucasian gentleman like stood up and was like, hey, have you heard of the safety pin program? Because like I'm wearing a safety pin and so I'm not going to like stand for that. And you can't say that. And that's what he said to the man who was being rude to me. And so I think what we need to do is just call people out, show people there are consequences for their shitty actions. So what I've started doing is when somebody is terrible to me, and I've been doing this with sexual offenders on the subway since I moved to New York because it's just such a prevalent problem, is whenever somebody does something like says a racist comment or says something that is violent towards me or tries to sexually assault me, I'll take their photo. And
that's like Black Mirror or something.
Right? Because then they immediately stop. They're like, what are you doing? And I always respond with ruining your fucking life. Because quite frankly, you don't know who you're dealing with. Like, you know, somebody was trying to get into an argument with me on the street the other day and was like, I'm going to call the police and have you sent back to where you came from. And I was like, oh, honey, like I used to work for one of the highest levels of government in Canada. The U.S. police aren't even allowed to talk to me. Like, do you know who you're antagonizing? No. So I think that showing people that there's consequences for their actions is very important.
Oh, but you're denying my free speech.
You can't get arrested.
Picture, bro. I'm just taking your picture.
You can't get arrested for free speech. We can still call you an asshole if your opinion is that of an asshole.
Exactly.
You're such a libertarian light.
I'm a like diet libertarian.
There you go. But like really,
you're a vegan libertarian. you eat the like soy alternative of liberty for breakfast.
Yeah,
you're like libertarian, like eat liberty for breakfast. I'm sorry, Brittany, keep talking.
Oh no, I was just gonna say that, you know, as for bigots, if you can't educate them, the best thing to do is to remind them that, you know, their views are not the be-all, end-all views. And there are consequences for being a shitty person, for being a violent person, for trying to minimize somebody else's safe space. So if I'm on the subway and somebody comes into my bubble and tries to frighten me by making racist or violent remarks against me, I'm going to frighten them back by reminding them that it won't be tolerated. And when you call attention to behavior like this, 9 out of 10 times people around you will clue in and go, oh, hey, yeah, that's not okay. And it is normally Caucasian people or like Caucasian males who will, when they see attention being drawn to it, they dawn in and go, oh, yeah, this isn't right. And then like sometimes they will
really
stand
that's
up
never
for you.
Been my experience.
Really?
That's very interesting. It's interesting to think about, like, so is it weird to say this? So, like, you're a woman of color.
Yes.
And I'm a white woman. Is that interesting that, like, I mean, maybe I'm just, like, weird or something. And but, like, whenever people mess with me, I always feel like dudes, like, side with the dude.
I always
feel like dudes are, like, they're just like, oh, well, he's just talking, or that's just the way dudes are, like, bro.
With manners of, like, sexual assault, it's definitely less prevalent, but I was talking like mostly with like overt racism.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I have had a couple really good experiences where somebody's been like, you know, catcalling me or being really violent or whatever, and I've had people stand up for me and say, hey, that's not okay, but it's definitely way less prevalent than, you know, when you call somebody out on their racism and be like, excuse me, like, you can't say that to me. And then I'll normally notice other people in the area are like, yeah, like, you can't say that, man. Like, that's not cool. But, yeah, definitely less so with, like, manners of sexism. More so with racism, less so with sexism.
Yeah, for sure.
Could I actually add on to that?
Yeah.
So I've seen since Trump's election all these instances of hate. And I can actually tell a quick story right now.
Yes, please do.
My earth science class was in Central Park. We were examining the rock formations in the area. And we took a quick bathroom break. And one of the girls who is of Asian descent, had her hair pulled and was threatened that she should go back to her country.
What?
Yeah. Police reports were filed, everything was handled, but that was my biggest fear with the Trump election. We give a lot more credit to the president than I think the president ever deserves, but I think the biggest danger about Trump is that he's empowered a very unappetized, very unlikable section of our society that has been underground for a while.
Yeah, all the angry people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's like a crazy thing, too, because, you know, Trump won. And that's whatever. That's something that we're all coming to terms with. And now these recounts are happening. And I'm almost more afraid about the recounts because in my heart, yeah, I would love more than anything for Trump to not be president. But I think at this point, like seeing the way that his supporters are acting and he's been elected, I think there would be a full out civil war. If it got,
I mean,
there's
going to be a civil war anyway. Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel. I mean, I feel very, very angry. I feel like there's a lot of crazy things going on. You know, there's the whole Dakota Access Pipeline thing going on. This show is not going to air for like another week or two. And who knows what's going to be happening with that? Because this is going to air, I believe.
Flint still does not have clean water.
Have clean water. Yeah.
We can afford to spray people down with hoses, but we can't give our citizens clean water.
I know, like Flint, Michigan, who gives a fuck about Trump or Hillary or any of this shit? There are people who are don't have access to clean water in America. Like, that's like some third world country shit. That shit shouldn't be happening in third world countries. But for it to be happening here means shit is really bad. Like, I don't think a lot of people understand, like, how big it is.
And the presidential elect has not tweeted anything about Flint, about Standing Rock, about any major issues, but he's having a Twitter feud with Broadway.
He's having a Twitter feud with Broadway. Oh my God.
What?
How? I love when people are like writing about how liberals are so bratty, 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 like PC bratty. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, yo, he went to see a play. Motherfucker who like is for shock therapy for gays went to see a motherfucking play. The theater is a gay space. I don't care who you are. Like, if you walk into a theater and you're straight, you're in a gay space. You are a visitor. Like, but here's the thing. The problem is, like, would I be respectful in most churches? Probably not. No, most churches, yes, I would be. There's a lot of churches where I'd be respectful. If they weren't saying some bigoted shit, I would be fine. But if I was in a church and someone said some homophobic shit, I would do some crazy shit.
And
like,
exactly.
Are you familiar with Queen Amore?
No.
Oh, she's this like hilarious performance artist. She did this video. It came out like the other week. If you Google Queen Amore or Facebook Queen Amore Bank, she's just like twerking all over this stuff in a bank, just being like, "Close your accounts because they're funding the Dakota Access Pipeline. Close your accounts!" Like twerking on their couches and stuff.
Oh my God.
So I feel like I would do that in certain churches. I would.
And like that's the thing. If you're a public space, like like a theater, I don't think they were even that disrespectful to him.
Mm-mm. Like they weren't at all.
Like it was a very respectfully crafted and respectfully delivered speech. And actually, when Pence addressed it, he addressed it very politically. But
he doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't care. Mm-hmm. But like to have the president elect calling them disrespectful and demanding an apology on Twitter.
Twitter?
What is this? Like he's a child. Like I have Twitter fights with other YouTubers that are like less petty than that. You know,
he's a prime example of the fragile male ego. And I just feel like, given the topic, I just want to talk about this. For all of us white, cisgendered male that are trying to be allies in this whole situation, we do have a challenge of helping without being too condescending, without taking the movement away from the people that need to push that movement forward.
And we do need you guys, though.
No,
need everybody. The thing that I'm finding is I really want men to be more empathetic to my fear of helping them. This really amazing activist I know, his name is Michael Basilis. He was on my show last season, but I lost the friggin' episode on like the way the archiving and whatever, but people listen to it. But he was doing this like Facebook Live thing where he was like, do not organize around me, organize with me. If I'm talking about white supremacy, do not get personally offended. If you get personally offended, yes, I am prejudiced against you. He's like, yes, I am prejudiced against white people, but because, like, he's like, I don't know if I'm describing this right, but he was just talking, like, about how people are not able to listen to their own advantages and privileges. Like, they want to help, but they can't face the truth about it.
Yeah.
It is a challenge, because no one is perfectly privileged either. I still come from a history of being an immigrant.
Yeah, you're an immigrant, I was going to say
Jewish.
That.
But I still try to acknowledge the privilege that I do have as a male, as a white person. The things that I am underprivileged by are underneath my skin. So you'd have to actually do research to find that out and probably develop a credulous. And I try to be aware that even though I do have aspects to me that aren't privileged, the things that give me privilege are right there on the surface, and it's what people immediately see. Now, the challenge is, how do I deal with that privilege? How do I keep that from interfering with my thought process when I'm listening to a person of color talk about their problems, to be able to better relate to people that aren't exactly like me? I feel like that is the challenge that a lot of privileged people have to deal with, and I feel like the best way to deal with that is to be constructive with it rather than destructive. Call it out and be as informative to them as possible.
Wait, call out who? To who? To who's them? Bigotry?
Call out the bigotry, call out the privilege in a constructive way. And I know constructive is a umbrella term, but we don't have to make enemies in order to make our point come across. Minds and hearts don't change over the course of a day. It takes time. And I feel like you knock down prejudices not by adding info, but by refuting or proving false the info that is based on that prejudice.
Yeah, a lot of the issues that are happening right now, there's so much false news and so much false statistics. I got in this argument with these Trump supporters on Facebook, and she was like, oh, do you really want to have a discussion about it? I'm like, yes, I do. Like, I came in with anger, and I was like, no, but I really want to talk about this. And she started sending me all these interviews, like, from, like, this thing called, like, the alternate viewpoint or something. And it was, like, all this stuff about, like, how white people are actually more affected by prison, or how black people aren't affected, like, in the wrong way, or, like, in a worse way. And, like, there's all this stuff about biological diversity or biodiversity that's, like, about how some races just are more prone to certain traits and how it's, like, genetic. And I was just like, oh, my God, like, you actually have things that you think are facts to back this up.
It's ridiculous.
So it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to refute, though, because they're not going to listen to you. They just don't want to. And I think, in talking about, like, invisible privilege, like, or invisible, like, lacking of privilege, or I don't know, what would the word be? Invisible.
We'll have to coin it at some point.
We'll have to coin it. But it also made me think, it makes me think about, it's like, oh, people are like, some people are just more prone to certain traits. It's like, yes, well, I'm a Jew. We're prone to anxiety because we were hunted.
Yeah.
Because, like, we were fucking hunted. It's not, like, genetic. It's conditioned.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And there's always going to be people who are different. Like, I'm from a mixed background. My mom is literally the whitest person humanly possible. Both of her parents are Scottish. She is Scottish. Like, she is white, translucent, freckles, and red hair. And my mom is the alcoholic in our family and was the one who had to go to rehab because she was a crack addict. My dad is Jamaican. He's full Jamaican, born and raised in Jamaica. His dad was in the government in Jamaica. My dad fled to Canada when he was 18. He wanted to be a Canadian. And so when I was growing up, I grew up in this family where it was all very much my mom's Scottish background and our Canadian heritage. And my dad never spoke about Jamaica. My dad tried very hard not to have an accent. When my dad started his first company, he would ask my mother to leave all of his voicemail messages because he knew that people would be more willing to do business with a white female than they would be willing to do business with a black male with an accent. And unfortunately, he was right. It was the early 90s, early 80s, actually. And I think that one of the only reasons that his businesses succeeded was because my mom was, like, the face of them as this, like, white upper middle class woman. And then when they would meet my dad, he would always introduce himself just as the contractor because he knew that, like, that's what would make people want to work with him more. And so I was always raised in this way that you were supposed to be very, you know, very ambiguous to your culture. Like, I never talked about anything Jamaican. Like, I didn't even realize I was black until I was about 15. And it was really interesting for me because, you know, when I got exposed to the world and started traveling and realized that racism was a thing, it was always very weird because I'm very racially ambiguous. So even when people look at me, like, people don't normally think I'm Jamaican. I get, like, people ask me if I'm Indian.
I would have thought you were Indian.
Exactly. Yeah, they'll say Indian or Native American. Yeah, I get, like, Hispanic. I get Egyptian. So people never know. So I have been kind of blessed in that way, but it is very interesting to see because my sister is also Caucasian. She's about 10 years older than me. She's fully Caucasian. We have different dads. And, you know, there's been a couple instances in my life where it's very clear that there is underlying racism. Like, you know, I'll go through a till and they'll stop me and check my bag and make sure there's nothing else in my bag, whereas my sister will have just gone through that same till and, you know, she's gotten no issues. Or even going out with my sister, like, you know, my sister won't get ID'd even though she's very young looking, and I'll get ID'd and stopped and have my bag searched. And it's like just instances like that that are like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've never experienced racism, but it's like I feel like it's something that, like, growing up for me, like, I was taught, like, as a, but, like, I'm also, like, raised by white liberal parents in New York City. So I don't know. But they conditioned me to think that, like, racism is something to be, like, embarrassed about. Like, racism is something, like, mm-hmm. like, it's not an acceptable way of thinking, and you certainly shouldn't act racist. But, like, there's, like, all this, like, implied stuff that happens in New York, and I'm sure I've done things that I'm not even aware of, or, like, yeah. made judgments that I'm not even, like, aware are racist judgments, and I try to become aware of what those are, obviously. But, like, it's, like, I feel like the Trump presidency has given these people, like, an excuse. Like, it's a rise of, like, people are no longer so embarrassed to be racist.
Yeah, they don't have to hide it anymore. And it's very unfortunate because, like, underlying racism has always been a really big problem. There was this study conducted, actually, that proved that, you know, white males were more likely to be given a discount at a car dealership than black males. I think it was something to the tune of a difference of $1,800. Like, they could be from the same economic background, they could be dressed the exact same, they could come in with the exact same story, and the car dealership would automatically associate the black men as lemons and the white men as equals, even if it was a black salesman. So, like, even with other races, there is this weird underlying racism, and I think it's just something to be aware of.
That's how there's still racism in the police, even though there are black cops. People.
Exactly. And so it's just something to be aware of. And so for allies, the only thing that I would say is just, you know, be patient and listen. Because if, you know, that's the thing that I notice a lot is I have a lot of habits that are horrible because I was raised in Canada with a white family and I never experienced racism, really. Mm-hmm. Like, very, very minimally did I experience any racism growing up. And so now I'm experiencing it on almost a daily basis, and it's something that's very frustrating and it's very disheartening, and it has made me feel almost, like, dehumanized because, you know, I've had this huge life. Like, I traveled to 87 countries. I've done all these great things. And then I'll have, like, you know, a homeless white guy screaming at me to go back to where I came from. And I'm sitting there like, how is this okay? Like, how do you feel like it's okay to say that? Like, why don't you go back to where you came from? Because if we're deporting all the immigrants, the only people that are going to be left here are Native Americans.
Yeah. Like, and I feel like...
And we're killing them off. Oh, I mean, we're not, but people are.
Yeah.
Do something about the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Please.
Donate. Look into it. Read about it. Do something. I hope you enjoyed your Thanksgivings.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
and I feel like people of color, women of color, need to share these stories more, because another aspect of white privilege, male privilege, is that we're in denial about these things because we just don't hear the stories enough. We don't want to believe it because we want to think that we do live in an equal world. It's not true, but I feel like it's almost a human nature thing. We want to...
Especially how we're treating Muslims in this country right now. People mm-hmm. don't want to believe that this is done unfairly. People are like, oh, well, look at what's happening in the European countries and blah, 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 and ISIS and ISIS and ISIS. I'm like, oh, my God, motherfucker. Like, this is not just ISIS. Like, this started with 9/11. Like, people were, like, driving down, like, Atlantic Avenue, where there are all these, like, Middle Eastern stores. Where it's like, you know, these people are just, like, families running businesses. And people running businesses, like, as much as I hate capitalism, like, that's what America is like, mostly just relatively peaceful people running businesses.
Yeah.
So it's just like, what that, like, I honestly feel like there needs to be more stories coming out that are about Muslims who are normal people, like, you know, have, like, their beliefs, mm-hmm. but, like, are not, like, violent people, because I believe that most people in general are not violent people. So it's ridiculous to have, but then also all that shit with the Patriot Act, right? Like, people don't believe that this shit is happening to innocent Muslims.
Oh, but it's horrible. And the other thing is like, America promises, like, this American dream. And so, like, I know for me personally, I was coming to New York to open a couple new businesses, and they were like, yeah, the best possible option for you is to put $500,000 into our economy, and then we'll just give you a green card. And that sounds really great on paper. But then you get here, and it doesn't matter that you've done that or that you have your green card or that you're a citizen, because you're still going to be getting shit from these, you know, lower middle class white people who think that you've come in and stolen their job, or think that you've come in and are ruining things, even though, you know, you've come in and are trying to build an economy or trying to build a business or trying to open jobs to people or trying to employ Americans. And it just, it doesn't matter, because people see the color of your skin and they make a snap judgment. And for some reason, the snap judgment that I'm getting in New York is people see the color of my skin and assume that I'm uneducated, poor, and there to mooch off of the government or to take jobs away from them. And it's like all the opposite of that is true. Like, I don't even...
I feel like the best way to dispel these prejudices is to share your stories, to share stories of hardworking immigrants who came here trying to live the American dream, the story of people of color trying to better their communities. And
the thing
ignorance
is
what brings about hate. Ignorance is what brings about hate.
And most of the people that I meet in America who, like, are immigrants and are here and are working or are illegal or whatever, they're doing jobs that Americans don't want to do. Like, you know, the first day after the Trump election, somebody that I'm seeing was in town and they're from London and they, like, their dad's a Duke or whatever. So we luckily had people, like, following us around, making sure that nothing bad was going to happen. But I went to go see my doorman, and my doorman is, like, this 7-foot-tall black man, and he was crying because somebody had run up to him, thrown a Big Mac in his face, and told him to go back where he came from, or else they were going to stab him on his night watch shift.
Like, that's disgusting.
How is that okay? And so he was so upset because he's been here for 20 years. He has a family here. He's worked here, and he's always worked jobs. He's always been a doorman or a bouncer or, like, these entry-level jobs, but he does it with a smile. He knows everybody's nanny. He knows everybody's dog walker. Like, he's just a great person. And, like, this person who came up and yelled at him, like, did they want his job? Probably not.
No.
Like, no, probably not. And it's one of those things where when I'm trying to have debates with people who are saying, oh, well, there are too many immigrants here and they are taking up jobs. And I'm like, have you ever applied to be a doorman? I've never yet had somebody say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, it's so mean. It's just mean. Like, come on, motherfucker. You're just being mean. Like, people are... I don't even know what to say on it.
I wish I could smack them all with some knowledge and just tell them, we're all from West Africa. Our whole species is from West Africa. So get off your high horse.
Well, how do you feel about this? Specifically, like, with Jews, who voted for Trump. I'm like, yo, like, we are Muslims, pretty much. Like,
yeah, like women who voted for Trump?
Oh, my God. I don't even understand. But I'm saying, like, people who, like the Israeli-Palestine conflict, it's like Muslims and Jews are... pretty, they come from the same area of the world. Like, apparently somebody in my family did, like, an ancestry thing, and, like, way back, we're, like, from Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Like, way back. So I'm like, how the hell are we going to be, like, voting against the well-being of Muslims? Like, especially when there's a risk of, like, there being some sort of Muslim Holocaust. It's like, I don't, that affects me on such an extreme level, like, genocide to me, like, triggers me. Even though I didn't experience the Holocaust, I know that that's, like, in the Jewish culture.
And you know
so
that
intensely.
People are capable of that kind of hate.
Yeah, so, like, I find it just, like, on such, like, a deep, like, a blood level offensive, you know? Like, I can feel it, like, in my vein. Just, I know you're not going to do this.
And it's, yeah, go.
I don't know about you, but I've heard the stories from my grandparents and the actual horrors that occurred, and you don't want that to ever happen to anybody else. Like, the dehumanization, the utter turning somebody who had meaning into something that is meaningless.
I wouldn't treat a pet hamster that way.
Yeah, I couldn't treat any living thing that way. I feel like even livestock, even though the end goal is to... eat it, should be treated as humanely
as
possible.
But they do treat them that way. That's the factory farms.
That's just another problem. I've actually written a paper on alternative sources of protein to combat factory farming. But I'm so glad you brought up the Israeli and Palestinian conflict as well. One of my best friends, like, I have two best friends. One of them is Palestinian. I'm not a Zionist, despite being a Jew.
I'm not either.
I feel like the only solution that could be long-lasting in that region is somehow Palestine and Israel need to amalgamate and find a way to work together.
Yeah, the problem is the Jews are like, a lot of the Israeli people are like, we did offer them peace, and then it's so complicated.
It's bullshit.
It's all bullshit. Yeah. I don't really know. If anybody wants to come on here as an expert in the Muslim-Palestine conflict, the Israel-Palestine conflict, I would love to hear your perspective. I'm open to both sides to come on here. I am not a Zionist, but you can email me at tooke@radiofreebrooklyn.com. That's spelled T-O-O-K. You can come on the show for anything. Write me an email. If you have opinions on this show, I'll read it on. I want like a lot of different kinds of people on this show. So let me know. And you can also check out this show on facebook.com/whatwouldsavetheworld or audioboom.com/whatwouldsavetheworld with dashes between every word. And that's where you can hear old episodes. Okay. I want to transition a little bit here and ask you some more questions. Here. So I do want to hear a little bit about, Robert, your internship. You were telling me you work for this really interesting thing that's relevant to activism and things. So please tell me.
All right. So the organization is called NYPIRG. That stands for the New York Public Interest Research Group. And it was founded sometime back in the 70s, emboldened by the recent student activist movements that were really behind all the change that we saw in the 60s. The civil rights movement was practically actioned by students.
Were the Black Panther students? Don't erase that.
Okay. Sorry. Well, based on their, some of them were, some of them weren't. Some of the Black Panther leaders were college educated as well. And it's not necessarily, you know, just students. I'm talking about like college students. Once you have the right to vote and once you're in a place where you're getting educated, you're supposed to take that education out into your world.
So even if you're not college educated, you're college age, like you're in that time where whatever you learned, you're going to try to do something with it.
I think it's vital because the decisions that you make and what you fight for today will affect the future in a very, very significant way.
So when you say college age, like, are you saying people who are in the age to start building? Is that what you're saying?
Because I didn't attend college,
but I think people would view me as such. So I'm just curious what your thoughts were on that.
College isn't for everybody, though. And I think it's not necessarily that you're in college or out of college. It's about that stage of your life where you're starting something that you're going to be working on for the rest of your life. And not only that, we're really underrepresented politically. We're the smallest voting bloc. Every other demographic, we don't write to our congressmen or our senators.
So what were you saying exactly what is it called again?
The New York Public Interest Research Group. And we have multiple campaigns. We campaign for environmental safety, consumer protection, higher education affordability. Every year we try to register as many new voters as we can, both on our campuses and off campuses. And the whole organization is statewide. We have chapters in CUNY. We have chapters in SUNY.
So what are these campaigns for? Is it like donations or is it like research to get people's opinions? Like, what are you trying to get?
It's a bit of both. And it's also just trying to activate people to make that change. For example, if we have a campaign on the environment to try and get a new initiative for clean energy through, we'll try talking to as many people on campus to give Cuomo a direct call and tell him, I can vote, and I'm not going to vote for you unless you put this through.
Oh, that's a good idea. So where can people so is the website just the New York Public Research Group.com?
Yeah, I'm sure just Google it and you'll find it. We're okay. Actually, like, pretty
Google
significant.
The New York Public Research Group. And also, I want to talk – Brittany, what do you think we should do about all this discrimination that's been going on? Like, how do we do that? Do you think that the safety pin is the solution, or what do you think?
Unfortunately, I don't think that passive things are going to work anymore. So I do think that the safety pin is a nice gesture, but I don't think that we can afford to be passive anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So I think that really what we need to do is start standing up for things. So like even myself, I feel very uncomfortable with confrontation. And yes, like I am a mixed woman, Black woman, but I do still have certain privileges. Like I'm very fluent in English. I'm very educated. So even when I see somebody being attacked, like I was on the subway yesterday and some guy was harassing an Asian woman who couldn't speak English. So I intervened and kind of called him out on his crap, and he did stop and settle down. And, you know, there's always that fear when you're about to confront somebody who clearly is bigoted or racist or clearly thinks of you as less than a person. There is always that fear, but I think that we need to start pushing the fear down and having faith that there's going to be people around us who are going to support us and standing up for people who are receiving this kind of discrimination. We need to be more active.
Yeah, and I've also seen some campaigns for like buddy systems where you can say where you live and get matched with someone who can help you. I'm worried about that getting infiltrated by terrible people, but I'm sure for the most part it'd be good. I've also talked about trying to start like an app that's almost like this. I mean, we should have it for men too, but I was thinking pretty much everybody who's not like feel anybody who feels like they really need it should be on there. Mm-hmm. But I want it to be like almost like a girl police, like
yeah, exactly.
Where there's like a couple of us in every neighborhood, and like you can have on your app either like you press a button and it calls like everybody you know to try to come help you, or you can press this button that's like, oh, I want the service, like I want these people to come. Or like it's also something where like because the police are notorious for not helping victims of sexual assault, or not being good at it, like not filing the proper paperwork to have like women who are educated on all of this who show up and are like, no, you have to fill that out. You have to fill that out. Who like will handle and be like, no, you have to listen to the victim. I had somebody who I have a friend who was sexually harassed and or sexually assaulted or not. They were like sexually harassed and then like physically assaulted. And the police were just like listening to this, like not even really a witness over her. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, there needs to be advocates for that. So I just feel like there needs to be groups that are better trained in conflict resolution, because a couple episodes ago I had a comedian and activist, Elsa Waithe, come on, and she was talking about how the police are not even really that often trained on conflict resolution. It's like an optional thing, and it's maybe like one day class. It's like, what the hell? The police are only don't even really have to be trained on that? That's absolutely insane.
It's crazy.
So
police training is another big problem in this country. Oh, they're clearly undisciplined if they're just shooting people on the street. And I'm not trying to diminish the impact of it mostly being black males that are shot, but I feel
and black
like,
females, center
yeah,
one.
Black males, black females, people of color, just let's just say generally the non-mainstream aspects. But I feel like if there was decent training given out, if there was actual like disciplinary action taken, if there were consequences to these actions, then it would already make a big difference in how these things happen and even prevent them from happening. Police aren't trained adequately.
In a big way, people in the government, people in big businesses, people who are police, they need to be held to accountability. The problem is there's not a lot of groups that are holding these groups accountable. Like, there almost needs to be, like, another aspect of these. But do we need another system?
Do we need another system to fix a broken system, or should we fix our broken system?
What do you guys – do you think – okay, so here is – we're gonna wrap up here, but I want to ask one final question. Do you think we could live without money? And feel free to let's roll with that for a little bit. Do you think there could be a system without money? Do you think money is to blame for a lot of this? Do you think because classism interacts with race and gender and all this stuff that it exacerbates our race and gender problems and sexual and like, you know, homophobia, all that crap? Do you think it exacerbates those problems because of classism?
Human greed is a huge driving force between everything that is a problem for equality and just for general respect in the world. There are many different cultures throughout the world who do live on trading systems and they seem great and peaceful, but they are small scale.
Communes. Yeah. Woo-woo.
Exactly. And they are small scale. And I think that if we could make them big scale, it would be quite a feat to undertake. I don't know if the way that the world is right now, I don't know if it could work, unfortunately. And this is just from my background. You know, like I work in finance. I'm a trader. I've been a stockbroker. I worked at Deutsche, blah, blah, blah.
Are you a capitalist?
I'm not a capitalist. I feel like capitalism is the physical manifestation of psychopathy. That is how I feel.
Oh, okay. Yeah, me too. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
But I also need to stay on top of it because I am a person who is disadvantaged.
You have to survive in it.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have to do that. I mean, come on. Like, I make money off my boobs. Like, come on.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I think that a society that was not based on money would be an incredibly peaceful society. Do I think that it is a possibility in my lifetime? Unfortunately not.
Okay, well, something that I want to say real quick about that is, yeah, I agree with you as much as I want to do that. Like, those people would have to be so into it. And part of anarchism is, like, no classism, no oppression, no hierarchy, but especially, like, things have to be voluntary. And people are not going to volunteer to live in that kind of system. It can't happen and have it be
healthy environment and have it actually be effective. And Robert, I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Mm-hmm. So as much as I'd like for a better system to be there, I feel like if we were to just suddenly get rid of money, people will find another reason to hold themselves, to hold their superiority over others.
It's like the Sneetches.
Yeah. Get rid of the money, whoever has the most guns will have the power. Get rid of all the guns, whoever has the most sharp objects will have the power. No matter what, there will always be an element in society amongst people that tries to stand above everybody else. I feel like that's an incurable condition that we have. It's just part of the human condition. We can be greedy, we can be selfish, and we can think only of ourselves at times. I'm not saying that it's something that we can't work on, but it is something that is there, and I feel like lately we've taken a see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil attitude to it.
Don't talk about racism. It's uncomfortable.
Oh, exactly. God, I hate that.
We need to talk about it, and in fact, I feel like we all need to be so much more vocal about what is pissing us off. Organize, protest. If there's something that makes you unhappy, don't bottle it up anymore. If you're unhappy about these pipeline protesters getting shot by water that we could be sending to Flint, Michigan, then start a protest. Organize. Do something about it, because otherwise the politicians are just going to think that you're either too apathetic to change anything, too unskilled to change anything, or just not motivated enough to change anything. And I know for a fact, because I've met lots of brilliant people my age, it's not true. We have the motivation. We have the skills. We have the drive. We just got to start organizing.
We do have to start organizing. We do have to start organizing. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I said, and we need to stand up to people who are trying to silence the nature of protest. Like, there have been so many people in the aftermath of the Trump protest saying, oh, shut up, he lost, deal with it. No, that is not how revolutions work. That is not how change happens. You don't just shut up and deal with things that are wrong morally.
I found that the people that say that are still complaining about Obama.
Yeah, fair. And then also, it's like, yo, look, I hate when people protest abortion. I think that's so fucking stupid, but you can protest it.
Exactly. Like, I might not agree with what you're saying, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. And we need to do that for each other, because if there are people out there, which apparently is, you know, a quarter of America, who feel that certain people shouldn't have voices or views, we need to tell them that we don't agree with them. And we need to stand up for people. Like, even if somebody is out there protesting, saying, you know, I want XYZ and I don't agree with it, I will still defend their right to protest.
Yeah, for sure. So we're gonna wrap up here, and I think I'm gonna say thank you so much, Brittany Palmer Wallace and Robert Feldman, for being with me here today. This has been What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. If you have any interest in being on, you can email me at toque@radiofreebrooklyn.com. That's toque is spelled T-O-O-K. Or you can go to my Facebook page at facebook.com/whatwouldsavetheworld, or you can go to audioboom.com/whatwouldsavetheworld with dashes in between every word, and that's how you can hear my other episodes. And I want to say that Brittany is going to be performing at my show on Wednesday, December 14th. It's between 10 p.m. and midnight at Sidewalk Cafe. That's at 94 Avenue A. And she's going to be doing a talk on discrimination, the rise in discrimination since the Trump presidency, a little bit about what she talked about here today. And I want to say thank you again for being on here. Do any of you have any closing points before we end this show? If you want to take like a minute or so and just say something about like what would save the world or your hopes for the future, or just anything that you feel like you want to put in here, anything you want to promote for yourselves.
You can go first.
Okay, so I think the next big step in human evolution is cooperation. We have so much more in common than we do in contrast, and I feel like once we start looking at those commonalities, the things that we all want, we want to live happily, we want to be prosperous, we just have different ways of going about it. But once we all realize that we're after the same thing and start working together towards it, I feel like that's when we'll actually stop caring about borders, skin color. We just got to stop, and I know it's not a reality, but we got to stop thinking along racial lines, along lines of origin, gender, sex, and just look at what makes us all the same, and that's human.
I agree with you. We need to do that, but we also need to value each other's differences and allow people to have their cultures like we were talking about earlier, just to reiterate that.
Yeah, no,
because I feel like people are getting mad at Bernie Sanders because of what he said about the identity politics, so just be careful with that because we want everybody to feel accepted. Okay, yeah, I like you. Sorry, I said to say it. Yeah, Brittany.
And what would save the world? Education, communication, collaboration. More people like us standing up for people. Unfortunately, we just can't afford to be passive anymore. And so I'm going to be advocating, you know, aggressive acceptance, aggressive acceptance of everybody. And, you know, educating people who maybe needed a little bit more. And yeah, check out my YouTube channel.
How do they find you?
I'm Intoxic Kitchen and BPW Babble. So, yeah.
And thank you so much for listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Bye.
Thank you.
And now for a segment by investigative reporter John Hannison.
Three questions struck my mind as I pulled my rented Ford Taurus into the driveway of the Church of Thrall's massive three-story side house. Why were they all dressed in white except Yahweh's Thunderblood? Why were they all Caucasian? And why were they all in line on the front lawn happily waving to me? This is John Hannison, reporting for Took Edelow and Radio Free Brooklyn, in another installment. The title? My mirror is the mirror of light. My mirror is in the hallway. As soon as I opened my door and stepped out at exactly noon, they all enthusiastically ran to me, a group of 12 women in Yahwasius. The complex was massive, multiple fields connected to their giant French colonial mansion, clearly a former plantation. I was asked how I was doing over 10 times before I reached the front entrance. Each time I responded, "Very well, thank you." It was comical in its repetition, frightening in its ritualism. They were so chipper, it made me wonder if I was a person worthy of their company. Perhaps this was the desired effect. Once in the antebellum-era palace, I smelt the earthy, fatty, decadent tones of roasted duck. Grace, one of the women staying there, whispered that they had roasted the bird for themselves and for me. It was then I realized I hadn't eaten since arriving in Thrall, Texas. For a moment, I wondered why I still hadn't been allowed to change rooms at the local motel. Then, my stomach enveloped my being, and I walked into the kitchen, my inquisitive mind becoming duller and duller with each intense inhalation. A giant table was prepared with 14 plates. Yahwasius sat on one head and I at the other. The plump, reddened duck sat already cut and prepared on the silver serving plate at the center. The women all found chairs at our side so quickly, they must have a seating plan. The formality and rigidity of the situation was the first time I had concrete reason to doubt Mr. Thunderblood's morality. I would describe the meal to you, listener, but unfortunately, my animal instincts took over, and I lost myself in the perfectly cooked meat. After consuming the waterfowl, my journalistic integrity returned, and my back straightened with unanswered questions, unbeknownst to Yahwasius. I recorded the following conversation. I again digitally altered his voice due to his original request.
Ah, that certainly was a good hearty meal. My condolences to the family of the poor duck. My congratulations to my stomach.
Yahwasius, did this place used to be a slave plantation?
Quite right, John. I like you. You have a tongue that gets to the point unforked. The size of the compound suits our purpose.
And what purpose is that?
The inquisitive mind of a journalist.
Why are all of you white? Why are all of the women in matching white uniforms? What is this place?
Do you doubt our hospitality, John? I suppose paranoia must be the norm for a northerner. This is a safe home in every respect. Many of these women would have nowhere to go. I allow them to stay here in exchange for a few hours of work on the farm. This is a place of worship, John. A communal sanctuary. White is a pure color, and quite frankly, cheap.
Answer why you are all Caucasian, and why these women seem afraid to speak.
You really have a paranoid mind, John. If a woman of any race came to this town seeking shelter, I would accept them. This is rural Texas. Everyone is white here. In fact, that's why I'm glad to see you. I can advertise to women outside the district. And have you considered these church ladies aren't speaking because you are being rather violent? We invited you into our home.
Why? Why only women, Yahweh sees?
Enough of this. If you are so caring of other people, why have your eyes been locked on my hands, which you claim shake continuously?
The tour I was given was quite impressive. It may please Tuke Edlo to discover that the compound is built much like a modern American commune. The women simply work the farm and stay for no other charge. They grow crops of all kinds. Peaches, Brussels sprouts, green beans, avocados, and even wildflowers for aesthetic reasons. They have 3 cows, 5 pigs, and 6 goats, all of which were unnamed. The birds on the property, however, were given loving designations. I must admit that despite my professional cool, I felt a little saddened to find we'd eaten Dizzy the Duck for lunch. Yahwasius did not allow a recorded or slightly in-depth interview with any of the women. He hovered behind me at all turns, or perhaps it was his powerful personality that made him seem present in every crack and corner, every animal, every seed. There was no doubt he owned this property. You could feel his various manifestations, in cups, in rooms, in trees and faces, like whispered words from a father figure. I was, however, able to gather some verifiable accounts of what life in the Church of Thrall was like. Athena McKenzie told me she was simply a traveler, stopping by the farm as needed rest from the unpredictable and turbulent life on the move. She mostly avoided contact and ignored the words of Yahwesus. I gathered she was agnostic. Another, the aforementioned Grace Elliott, was kicked out of her strict evangelical household by her mother for being homosexual. Yahwesius accepted her preferences. She did, however, raise concerns for the lack of minorities on the farm, stating it concerned her. Most of the rest, it seemed, were true believers in Mr. Thunderblood, repeatedly calling him God's stenographer. When the tour was over and the sky shone dark with the shimmer of uncovered and reclaimed stars, Yahwesius offered me a room to sleep in for the night. The tour was so elongated, the day so exhausting, and my motel room so deplorable that I accepted despite growing tensions. What happened next gives me pause to dictate, and is the start of this story unraveling into bewildering madness. My reports up to this point have shown a man in full health, full stature, and fully self-aware. Listener, I am not ill. I awoke from deep, burdening sleep, hearing Alwasius' booming voice, speaking to a woman who I instinctually believed to be Grace, in his private study. I left my room and approached the oaken door, engraved with carvings of 2 circles enveloping each other. Where both perfectly shaped rings met was engraved a strangely ornate book I believed to be the St. James Bible, and the word Ego Genosis. It sharply and haphazardly with the wild knife cuts. I pounded the door, worried about the safety of the feminine voice I heard inside. There was no response. I could only fulfill the duty of a journalist, not a savior. I managed to record the odd sounds and words coming from the throat of Mr. Thunderblood. Here is what I heard directly from the tape while still agreeing to Yahwasius' request to alter his voice. Listener, I have looked into the mirror, and it is indeed illuminating.
So, today, actually, I'm going to be performing at Bizarre Bar, which is at 12 Jefferson Street in Bushwick. It's Circus of Dreams, produced by Lindsay Lonesome. I will be performing. Jeffrey Freer will be performing. Alexi Transparent will be performing. And a bunch of other people. It's